Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, your EPN channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who are having great success today. We're speaking with Mr. John D. Wood, Esquire, a graduate of NYU School of Law and TCU, where he earned his bachelor's degree summa cum laude in English and philosophy. He represents real and intellectual property owners and insurance matters through his law firm and consults on technology policy through the Humachine LLC. He is co-author of The Humachine, Humankind, Machines, and the Future of Enterprise. And Mr. Wood, thanks for joining us here today on EPN.
My pleasure. Thank you, Eric.
Yes, sir. Good to have you out. Looking forward to hearing from you today in all regards. So what do you mean by the Humachine, and how is this different than cyborgs?
That's a great question. The Humachine is a portmanteau where we combine human and machine quite literally, and we mean the better qualities of humankind and the virtues of machines, and we're combining those to offset the weaknesses of each other. And this is really at the enterprise level. When I say combining humanity and machines, we don't mean that in the morbid physical way of a cyborg, where you're literally combining or installing a computer chip inside a human brain. And that's the difference between our pathway to superintelligence through the Humachine and the pathway of someone like Elon Musk and the Neuralink program. What they're proposing is it literally installing a computer in the human brain, and that is cyborgization. And we don't think that's a scalable solution for enterprise, and have other reasons why I don't suggest we go that path, but that's the distinction between the Humachine and the cyborg.
And certainly do appreciate the details there. Now, what is Kasparov's law, and how can ordinary workers compete with AI?
Well, as most of you recognize Kasparov from his role in losing to Deep Blue, IBM's supercomputer that was a chess-playing engine, Kasparov is one of the greatest chess players of all time, world grandmaster, and when he lost to Deep Blue, it sent reverberations throughout the computer science community, and a lot of intellectuals were concerned about that. And so in the wake of losing to Deep Blue, he staged the ultimate chess tournament, which was an experiment in his mind to determine what is the highest level of competitive chess playing attainable. And he thinks chess is a metaphor for life. And so if we have a super smart chess playing engine, then that would be super intelligent. And what he determined the outcome of that experiment was actually two amateur chess players who are virtually unknown in the competitive chess world. They built a custom AI program that they fed prior tournament play. They fed that data into the AI, and it could recognize, depending on the layout of the chessboard, which one of these two players would have the advantage, and they could do deep analysis of their opponent's moves. And by using this custom software, these two amateurs beat grandmaster chess players, and they beat chess-playing engines. And this proved Kasparov's law, which is that combining ordinary humans with ordinary machinery with the right process can produce extraordinary results. In fact, results that are superior to what's attainable by a human genius or by a supercomputer acting alone. And so the implications for enterprise from Kasparov's law is that if we can design our organizations to combine human skills, uniquely human strengths, with machine capabilities like big data analysis and artificial intelligence and those scalable computational processes, then we can achieve super intelligence that way. And that's how ordinary people can actually be part of something that is super intelligent. We don't have to be geniuses or all computer programmers if we can learn to combine human and machine skills with the right process.
Now, looking at Moravec's paradox, what is Moravec's paradox, and what are some examples of where AI is limited but humans excel?
Moravec's paradox goes back a long way, and I don't think it's something that we're going to resolve. I think it's just a stubborn fact about the world. It holds that where humans are naturally gifted, machines struggle, and vice versa. So, for example, humans are pretty good at moving through space. You know, toddlers, once they learn to walk, they're pretty much competent at this for the rest of their life. It's much harder to program a computer to do that. Boston Dynamics is starting to do robots that can move through space pretty effectively, keep their balance and so forth, but that's taken a long time. So there are things that computers really struggle at doing that come pretty naturally to humans too. You can have a computer that's performing a superhuman chess move while the room is on fire. It doesn't have the general intelligence to be able to say, maybe I should leave the room. It's still focused on optimizing this specific decision in front of it, that it's not paying attention to the broader context. So machines, as smart as they may be in very narrow ways, lack the general intelligence that we humans take for granted.
Certainly interesting information and a topic for sure. Today we're joined by Mr. John D. Wood, who represents real and intellectual property owners and insurance matters through his law firm and consults on technology policy through the Humachine LLC. He's also the co-author of Humachine, Humankind, Machines and the Future of Enterprise, and he's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, as we continue on, and tell us, why is dark data more so than big data and enterprise game changer?
Well, everyone's heard about big data lately, basically data that's so large it doesn't really fit onto the machine that you're using to process it. A lot of entrepreneurs have had access to big data computations thanks to cloud computing that's now made much more horsepower of computational abilities accessible to smaller enterprises so they can use it as they need. But dark data is the next step beyond big data. This is data that's unstructured. It doesn't exist in a clean table like in a spreadsheet format. This is sound bites or data that's just out there in the world, and that's the vast majority of data actually is dark data, not cleanly sorted, parsable data. So there's a few startups right now like Lattice that are finding ways to sort and render usable dark data. And when we're able to do that, we're going to have a lot more information is going to show up to us, and we can take that information and process it into actionable intelligence. And that's going to be a breakthrough, because right now we're swimming in data that we don't know how to process and act intelligently upon. And it's not really, it's like salt water when you're thirsty. If you can't get intelligence and insight out of it, it's really not that helpful.
Now, looking at robots here, talk to us about why robots seem to be taking our jobs but could very well make our jobs.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a lot of anxiety right now about automation and losing jobs to a robot, and we coined the term bot sourcing to describe that phenomenon, which is like outsourcing, where a company uses something else to accomplish what humans were doing. They're using a robot to do that now. And I think that there's actually going to be quite a few jobs that get bot sourced. These are not just physical jobs that are dangerous or would involve repetitive stress injuries that we're, you know, learning to build robots to do, like assembling a car, but also computational or decision-making jobs that are pretty repetitive and that can be automated and standardized. Things like processing a mortgage or a loan application, that kind of a decision, it belongs to mid-level and low-level managerial class right now. Those jobs are going to be bot sourced as well. Radiology jobs, you're looking at images and looking for patterns and anomalies. That is perfect for a machine learning algorithm that can handle much higher volumes at a much higher speed with higher levels of accuracy and consistency. So a lot of those jobs are going to get bot sourced, but the former CEO of GE has said the notion that a robot is going to be overseeing a factory without human oversight is BS. It's simply not going to happen. Like I said, robots and machines lack a lot of things that humans take for granted, and I don't think they're going to be generally intelligent in the next 20 years, if ever. What's hard to imagine, you know, humans are good at worrying about things. So we're worried about losing our jobs. But what's hard to imagine is the jobs that will be created by this widespread deployment of artificial intelligence at work. And it's similar to when the steam engine was invented, and people that worked making saddles or they raised horses, they had a lot of anxiety about what's going to happen to our jobs. But it was hard for those communities to imagine the world post-automobiles and how much more jobs would actually be created by that. So in a lot of ways, bot sourcing is going to free up human resources to work on other things, to work on things that may be more enjoyable to the humans or may become easier to us, things that involve emotional intelligence and intuition and care and aesthetics. Those kind of jobs are going to see an increase, and I think that's ultimately going to make humanity better off. Instead of trying to teach people to behave like robots, we're going to have robots that can do that, and people can be like people.
That sounds good to me. Good stuff there. And how do we address AI seemingly apocalyptic threats, including the control problem, algorithmic bias, and bot weaponization?
This is a challenge, a very hard, pernicious challenge of how do we keep the genie in the bottle. And I'll take those in kind. So with the control problem, the concept there is that we would invent an AI that is so intelligent, it escapes our control. It no longer depends on us. It's found a way to sustain itself and become independent. And if its objectives become antagonistic to human interest, there would be little we could do to deal with it. And this is why Professor Bostrom says the control problem could be the last challenge humanity ever faces. If we get it wrong, we're doomed. Now, if we get it right, we could live in a world that's post-scarcity. So it's worth trying to make AI smarter, but we need to be building in protections. And I think that there should be something like an off switch built into the constitution of any AI program. There should be some serious thought given. This isn't science fiction anymore. We need to take Asimov's laws of robotics seriously. We need to revisit them. We need to find where the loopholes are in Asimov's laws of robotics, and we need to close those loopholes. And I think this should be not a top-down regulatory response from the federal government, but it should be a public-private discussion between the technology leaders, as well as lawmakers and other stakeholders like privacy advocates to figure out how do we get this right. You had also mentioned, you know, the baking in bias, and that is a serious challenge right now. It's less speculative than the control problem, which may be some distance away in the future. The problem with consumer-facing applications of AI is that AI is only as good as the data that it's fed upon. And so if you're asking an AI system to process all these mortgage applications, and it's looking at the past as a guide to the future, then you know things like racial redlining, which is now a crime or a violation of federal law, that would be an output of the AI, because we did it in the past and they'll continue to do that in the future. And that applies in using, for example, facial recognition to police and to determine who is going to be a suspect. And you look at who's in prison now and you feed that into the AI that learns, oh, if you look like this, you're more likely to be a criminal. And that really just kind of perpetuates stereotypes that might come from racial profiling. So that's something that all consumer-facing applications of AI should have some human ability for human to intervene on behalf of the company that's using it to make sure that there are no biases being baked in. And then, like they do in the EU, data subjects who have their data being handled and used by an AI, they should have some transparency into how that's being used.
Well, I'm sure the listeners would agree this has been more than informative and really appreciate your taking the time to join us here today. As we conclude, how does a becoming technology-driven company require us to become more human and not less?
That's one of the counterintuitive findings from our research, is that with all these shiny new objects coming out of Silicon Valley to potentially invest in, leaders of enterprise really should be investing in human resources. We should be finding how do we make our workplace more ergonomic? How do we give our human workers more comfort so that they can be more creative, so that they can be more confident in what they're doing? And how can we use AI to get more skills and enhance the skills that our human workers already have. So I think that's one of the answers to succeeding in this technology era, is to ensure that our organizations are humane, that they're purpose-driven, that we're not letting the tail of technology wag the dog of human welfare, and that we use technology to make our lives better and not simply increase profits for those who own the technology. And that's going to be, whether we succeed or fail in that, it's going to define our future.
Again, Mr. Wood, really appreciate your time and joining us on the program. I'm sure listeners want to know how they can connect with you and get more information on the Human Machine LLC, as well as your book, The Human Machine. Where can listeners get further details?
They can look at thehumanmachinebook.com. The book is also available on Amazon. It's available from the publisher's website on Routledge. You can look me up on LinkedIn. Just look for my name, John Wood. I'm happy to talk with people or connect with you on social media.
And certainly appreciate the invitation. Again, Mr. Wood, all the best, and thanks for joining us here today on EPN.
My pleasure.
We've been speaking with Mr. John Wood, who represents real and intellectual property owners in insurance matters through his law firm and consults on technology policy. Through the Human Machine LLC, he is co-author of The Human Machine, Humankind, Machines, and the Future of Enterprise. And for all the details, visit thehumanmachinebook.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.